comes from a history of internationalism. Palestine has always been center to that. The Third World Liberation Front was called the Third World Liberation Front for that reason. It was part of the Global South, right? It was understood as such. And so where...
The Electronic Intifada.
This is the Electronic Intifada podcast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman.
And I'm Asa Winstanley.
Israel lobby groups are continuing to hijack public education in California in order to censor Palestinian and Arab scholarship and protect Israel from criticism at all costs. Over the last few years, as we've reported, anti-Palestinian organizations have attacked the California Education Department over an initial draft of a statewide ethnic studies model curriculum. That draft highlighted Arab American studies and accurately described the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, or BDS, campaign for Palestinian rights. But that curriculum was sidelined in August 2019 after Israel advocacy groups complained that the curriculum, quote, singles out Israel for criticism and would institutionalize, in quotes, anti-Semitic stereotypes in public schools. A revised program was proposed, reinstating Arab American studies, but California public education officials capitulated to the demands by Israel lobby groups to gut the program, which was rubber stamped earlier this month, and to abandon the root of the ethnic studies project and erase all mentions of Palestine. In disgust, all 20 of the ethnic studies educators who drafted the original version of the curriculum demanded that their names be removed, and the California Teachers Association said it would be unable to approve this version. Joining us today to talk about the fight for ethnic studies in California and in the larger context, the attempts to silence Palestinian rights in academia from the US to the UK and beyond, are Lara Kaswani and Robin D.G. Kelly. Lara Kaswani is the executive director of the Arab Resource and Organizing Center and a lecturer in race and resistance studies at the College of Ethnic Studies at San Francisco State University. And Robin D.G. Kelly is an eminent historian and the author of many books and essays. He's a distinguished professor and the Gary B. Nash Endowed Chair in U.S. History at UCLA. Robin and Lara, it's an absolute honor to have you both with us today on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So let's first talk about what happened recently when the California State Board of Education approved the final draft, or rubber stamped the final draft of the ethnic studies model curriculum. We had last spoken about this last October, and Lara, you had warned us of what was happening as right-wing groups were coalescing to destroy ethnic studies. Get us up to speed on the latest developments.
So the mandate of AB 2016, which is what, had the California Department of Education develop this curriculum, ends on April 1st, tomorrow. And so the curriculum is supposed to be finalized and made public to educators across the state of California by April 1st. So on March 18th, the State Board of Education met to deliberate the revisions that have been made. This is the fourth round of revisions that the CDE has made to the curriculum, and heard from hundreds of people in public comment, most opposing this curriculum, mostly teachers and communities and youth, who raised concerns about the gutting and whitewashing of ethnic studies as a result of right-wing attacks. State Board of Education did not even respond to any of the public comments. There was no attempt to examine or explore some of the concerns that were raised by, like you said, CTA and the original writers of the curriculum. And very quickly, rubber stamped the curriculum and approved all revisions that CDE had made, which essentially erased Palestine, whitewashed the pedagogy and the framework of ethnic studies, completely stripped it of its nature and its original, the values and principles that were included, and included Jewish studies in Asian American studies, which is actually a pro-Israel lesson plan, has now been inserted in Asian American studies as part of these revisions in the process that CDE has undergone alongside the pro-Israel lobby groups.
Yeah. And Robin, I know that you just recently reviewed the curriculum, the updated curriculum. What were some of the things that stood out to you as a professor of U.S. history, as someone who's been deeply involved in the scholarship of critical race theory?
Well, you know, there are a couple of things. Wait, I'm on mute.
Yeah.
There are a couple of things to consider. Broadly speaking, this is not an ethnic studies curriculum at all. It's a kind of multicultural multiracial curriculum that doesn't attend to issues of power, which is precisely why you have an ethics studies curriculum in the first place, to really understand, you know, not just that we're different, but how difference is produced and creates these inequalities. And so when you look at just the Arab Americans section, if you compare the first draft, which actually had Palestinians in there, and not only was there a much longer, more in-depth history, but it was a history of movement, a history of social movements, of struggles that actually connected struggles for to end occupation of Palestinian lands, to Palestinian student movements, to connections between, say, Black Lives Matter and other kinds of really kind of oppressive structures that people are pushing back against. And so all that was taken out, everything. There's no mention of Palestine or Palestine. In fact, there's no mention of Israel in the Jewish section. and there's a reason for that. You know, it's like they don't want to deal with the issue of what role does Israel play in US politics around race, ethnicity, and power. And then also they do have one mention of Israel, which is to establish that the Israeli state begins in ancient times and that they were displaced and they can come back. I mean, that's actually in the sort of fake curriculum. So in the end, I mean, I really want to encourage everyone to go and actually, you can download the document and see it for yourself. Yeah. I'm deeply disappointed in, let me back up. I'm really proud and amazed by how many organizations push back. You know, you have members of the original advisory committee, 20 of them, who decided not to endorse this and created their own organization. You have all these organizations, and you can see this on the website for the Arab Resource and Organizing Council. You could see that. And in that list of organizations, it's a massive list of all these organizations, legitimate, you know, academic, scholarly organizations that said, we don't endorse this at all. Although I'm disappointed by some of the organizations that are not on there. And that's another story we could talk about.
Amazing. Laura, can you talk about the, you know, kind of the significance of the CTA and as Robin mentioned, the original authors of the curriculum denouncing the final version and what that means about like where the model curriculum stands and how educators are planning on circumventing it if you know if they adopt it at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting is it's not only significant that CTA and all these academic associations and community organizations and scholars came out against this curriculum, they're also identifying and understanding the role and relationship between U.S. imperialism and Israel, right? Yeah. And how apartheid Israel and pro-Israel lobby groups actually gutted, they successfully gutted an entire anti-racist curriculum for the state of California. Right. So what started off as an attack on the inclusion of Palestine and Arab American studies in the curriculum evolved into an all-out assault on anti-colonial education, on anti-racist education, on liberatory transformative education for students in California by the same forces essentially that tried to stop ethnic studies from being formed in 1968, right? So you have people that are invested in the oppression and the power relationship and hierarchies that exist as a result of US imperialism and racial capitalism now saying, no, we do not want Palestine. But not only that, we want to strip the entire curriculum of the framework, which really we've said this many times, and Jason Ferreira sort of articulated this during our webinar, that you know, ethnic studies is not a syllabus. It's a framework. It's you know, it's not just a series of lesson plans, right? And so that the fact that they are able to strip the framework makes it impossible for teachers to teach ethnic studies, right? Even if they don't want to use the lesson plans in that curriculum, the entire ethnic studies model curriculum itself is not an ethnic studies curriculum. And I think that is really what's meaningful here, is that we've built solidarity among so many scholars and community organizations and movements who now see the assault on ethnic studies, the assault on Palestine, as an assault on them, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this is, there's a lot of potential here. So where we are now is that the liberated ethnic studies model curriculum is being developed by some of the original writers, including other scholars across the country, who are saying, absolutely not. This is an insult to students. In fact, it's violence against our students, and we're not gonna enable that. So we're gonna shelf this, and then we're gonna actually work with our own curriculum that's rooted in the discipline itself. And that's gonna be made available to the public. That's gonna be made available to teachers. That's gonna be made available to districts. And at the end of the day, we know it's the teachers on the ground. That's where it's gonna get implemented, is in that classroom. And the teachers themselves have said, we're not using this curriculum. That being said, while we're moving in that direction, pro-Israel interest groups are already mobilizing across the country as well. And they've made it very, you know, a clear call to action to ensure that JCRCs and ADLs are saying, go to your local districts and ensure that anti-Israel curriculum is not included in ethnic studies. Right. So we know that, you know, we lost the battle of the ethnic studies model curriculum, but the war continues, right? We have a lot more work to do, and we're prepared to do that. And we're, the Save Arab American Studies Coalition is continuing to build across movements and communities across the country to strategize and coordinate for ways for us to ensure and protect the needs of all of our students and communities.
It's really interesting to hear about this phenomenon that you're describing of a coalition being built in response to the gutting of this curriculum. And it kind of reminds me in a way of what's happened in the Labour Party in the UK. I mean, it's quite a different context, it's non-academic context. But in the course of the smear campaign against Jeremy Corbyn and the left wing of the Labour Party, you know, there was a lot of people who weren't really familiar, I think, with Palestine, although people were instinctively supportive, most people on the left instinctively supportive of the Palestinians as the underdog and people being oppressed. There was a lot of people who weren't necessarily familiar with just how dirty the Israel lobby works, basically. And so they received a kind of crash course education in it, in the kind of smear campaigns. The smear campaign was victorious, right? So it's Jeremy Corbyn didn't become prime minister, and he was basically kicked out of the Labour Party as the result of that. So what you're describing reminds me of that in a way, that the battle goes on, I suppose, because there's still a lot of people now who haven't forgotten that, and their eyes have been open to it. And it sort of just seems to me that this is just another example of how, because of Israel and because of the Israel lobby, we can't have nice things, right? So this whole anti-racist curriculum was basically just gutted and scrapped because of what the Israel lobby wants to do. That's not really a question, more of a comment, but does that resonate at all?
I'd love to hear other people. I think it resonates definitely. I mean, there's a couple of things to consider, and Laura made this point. The attack on the curriculum is not just an attack on the curriculum, it's part of a coordinated attack. The fact that they incorporate the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance working definition of anti-Semitism in the new revised curriculum is part of that coordinated attack to silence any opposition to the violation of international law, that is, you know, Israeli settlements, occupation, apartheid, all of this, and to basically criminalize BDS. And so in doing so, and I just want to just raise it, I mean, one of those coalitions that did emerge out of this was a group calling itself Liberated Ethnic Studies Model Curriculum Coalition, which consists of many of the authors of the original document, who basically are doing what I think ethnic studies has always meant to do. And that is, you know, this outcome is inevitable. If you go to the government, if you say we're going to legislate ethnic studies, we're going to, you know, we're going to hopefully that the governor is going to endorse it and our state legislators, even Shirley Weber, who comes out of ethnic studies in a certain kind of way, old school ethnic studies, Secretary of State, that you can't win when you expect the state to do that work. It always comes from the bottom up. It comes from the work of activists, organizers, students, like, you know, the document that came out of the Turath report, which came out of the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, where students themselves, young people, Arab youth organizing, came and produced their own set of questions, their own interrogation on what an Arab studies curriculum could look like. What are the questions? And so we have to see this not as a loss or defeat. It was already defeated once the state kind of took over, but as part of the win behind our back to build from the bottom up. Because the fact of the matter is that if you didn't have student protests, if you didn't have, you know, disruptive civil disobedience, some kind of opposition, then there would be no curriculum. There would be no ethnic studies. And that's where it sort of has to delay. But can I just say one more thing, which I didn't say, this is so important.
Yeah.
If you look at the Arab studies curriculum, you come away, the new version of it, with certain facts. Fact one, Arabs are slightly wealthier than the rest of us. Fact two, most Arabs are really Christians. Fact three, they don't really exist, but they do exist in movies as stereotypes. And that, you know, they become people after 9/11, but not really people. They were like victims of violence. So don't exist as people until they are bridge builders and civic leaders and positive images. That is ultimately what the 21-page section of this massive document on Arab studies says. That's what it says. It doesn't say anything more than that. And that's where we are. And that's why we've got to build our own curriculum at the grassroots and really, you know, realize that universities, schools, elementary schools, they're not the institutions to save us, but the people inside can do the work.
Robin, can you talk a little bit more about that and how internationalism and anti-imperialism are key components, have always been key components of true ethnic studies curricula, and how Palestine and Arab American studies fit into that, and why the Israel lobby or its, you know, liberal Democratic Party allies in the State Board of Education want desperately to do away with that and present some sort of, like, I mean, what you described before was like, it sounded like a, you know, a Chevron commercial or so, you know, something, some Hollywood movie. How has this been diluted? And why is that not a passive action, but it has been, you know, something that has formulated over years and years, you know, and co-authored by Israel and its allies.
Right. I'll try to be very brief because I would love to hear what Laura has to say about this. And she actually said what the answer is, which is, it's not that they don't want to study or have classes about difference. They don't want an anti-racist or anti-imperialist curriculum. And we should expect they don't, because we still live in a settler colonial society as it is. I mean, the same liberal regime that we think will endorse an anti-racist curriculum is the same one that almost on the first couple of weeks of the administration bombed Syria. I mean, these things are connected. And so I think that, if we see, just like any university, for example, if we see, if we create any kind of pedagogy or curriculum or coursework or scholarship that is deeply anti-imperialist, you're basically challenging the whole edifice, the whole structure. Because when you start raising questions about how this country came about, who are these immigrants and what did they flee? And what was the US role in creating conditions for them fleeing? And what was the conditions for their own segregation within the nation state and the kind of violence that they experienced historically and in the current moment? What is that about? Once you start to untangle that and understand that it's not simply because they're different. And this goes to anti-Semitism too. I mean, it's such a tragedy that even the definition of anti-Semitism comes down to, well, they just hate Jews, without actually looking at the structural history of anti-Semitism and its relationship to other forms of oppression. But ultimately, when you start to challenge power, you're going to get this kind of pushback. There's no way it's going to be incorporated in the state of California, the so-called left coast, or anywhere. Because when you start to raise that question, you got to raise the question of how do we become a prison state? How did we become a place where there's deep inequalities just within the state of California? How do we become a place where the most significant scholar in Arab American studies, Rabab Abdulhadi, is being attacked constantly, threatened all the time about losing her job? She's just one. And so you've got to interrogate that. That becomes part of the curriculum. And that then exposes the complicity of the state of California, the US nation state, with the reproduction of the same systems of oppression, and in specifically the maintenance of Israeli occupation and violence and violation of international law.
Yeah, Laura, did you want to pick up on that?
Yeah, you know, early on when we were struggling with CDE with this curriculum, they asked us several times to prove that Arab American studies is ethnic studies. That was their concern, was it's not actually ethnic studies. There's no history there, right? And where we are now is the curriculum itself is not an ethnic studies curriculum at all. And that goes to the history of ethnic studies and the fact that it is an internationalist movement and framework, right? So it came out of the student strike of Third World Liberation Front and the Black Student Union at San Francisco State and Berkeley in 1968. At that time, they were fighting for opening up the universities for social movements and struggles of indigenous and racialized communities. That was the intention of ethnic studies, and not racialized and indigenous communities in San Francisco, racialized and indigenous communities internationally, right? Even back in 1969, the Black Student Union and the Organization of Arab Students were organizing Palestine Day together on campus at San Francisco State. That's the history of ethnic studies. That's really what it's about. And that's why the strikers of the Black Student Union and Third World Liberation Front sent a letter to CDE saying, we reject this curriculum, that Palestine is ethnic studies, and attacking Palestine is essentially attacking ethnic studies. So where we are today and what that means is there's even an inclusion of a biological definition of race in this curriculum. I mean, imagine that, right? They rewrite history. So the attacks in Arizona on ethnic studies were originally described as right-wing attacks. They removed the word right-wing, right? Because now they don't want to be associated with the same right-wing attacks that have been made in Arizona, because CDE basically, and the state essentially now is coalescing with those same right-wing forces to have that same thing happen here in California. So yes, ethnic studies comes from a history of internationalism. Palestine has always been center to that. The Third World Liberation Front was called the Third World Liberation Front for that reason. It was part of the Global South, right? It was understood as such. And so that is why today we have a curriculum that's gutted and whitewashed. And we knew that we weren't expecting a liberatory anti-imperialist curriculum to come out of CDE. Our concern has always been, whatever does come out of CDE, we don't want it to roll back the decades-long work that has been happening on the ground by teachers to be able to teach their students, right? Our concern now is this curriculum essentially criminalizes teachers for teaching about Palestine. Like, what does that mean for a teacher who wants to discuss anti-Zionism when the IHRA definition now is embedded in this curriculum? And what does it mean when Palestine is completely erased? I mean, just to give you guys an example of how far they went to erase Palestine and internationalism as a result, the CDE took issue with Rashida Tlaib being mentioned as a significant figure in our lesson plan, in our original lesson plan. That was one of their critiques. A sitting congresswoman, we're not even talking about freedom fighters, we're talking about a sitting congresswoman. And so this is where it's at today. And I think it speaks volumes about what's going to happen across the country and other places, because you know, California does set the tone in many ways around this kind of work. And so if they were able to succeed in this regard here in California, what does it mean for other states? And that's why we're in conversation with others and working on this liberated ethnic studies curriculum to ensure that teachers have the tools they need, but they're also equipped with understanding what it means when you have to deal with Zionist backlash, because we know that's going to happen. And they also know what it means to build with community and build movements on the ground with grassroots organizations. So you're also reinforced with mass support, and you're not isolated as individuals who are vulnerable to these Zionist attacks, because you choose to actually stay true to the discipline of ethnic studies.
Go on, Nora. Did you want to speak?
well, kind of on to that point, and this has been done before, and where, you know, Israel lobby organizations kind of recruit students to spy on professors or take classes with certain professors and then kind of report back and formulate some sort of like lawsuit, saying that they feel uncomfortable because they talk about Palestine. And I feel like this, you know, especially with the inclusion of the IHRA definition in the ethnic studies curriculum, that this could be used by Israel lobby groups as yet another way to litigate against university administrations, against professors themselves, like, you know, the example of Rabab Abdulhadi. Do you feel like this could happen? Like, should professors, should entire departments like kind of be on alert for the ethnic studies model curriculum to be used as a battering ram for further litigation?
I don't think it's just the ethnic studies model curriculum that's going to be used. I think it's the fight against ethnic studies that's going to be weaponized against teachers and communities across the country. As we're talking about the ethnic studies model curriculum, there's another bill being developed to make ethnic studies a mandatory high school requirement, graduation requirement, which was previously vetoed by Gavin Newsom because of the ethnic studies model curriculum and its inclusion of Palestine. Now there's a new bill being developed, and in that new bill, they include a penal code, which essentially says teachers cannot discriminate against other students. Now, this is a code that is, you know, part of the California Department of Education. It is embedded in California education already, but they specifically use this penal code in ethnic studies bills as a way to say, to assume, first of all, that ethnic studies is discriminatory, and then to make it possible for teachers and districts to then be litigated against for teaching about Palestine. Essentially, that's what's going to happen, because the people pushing for this penal code are the same people who attack this ethnic studies, ADL, the JCRCs. It's the same forces who are now saying we need to ensure that there are guardrails to protect certain types of students from the discrimination and inherent racism of ethnic studies, right? So this is what the concern is going to be. They're going to insert these guardrails across different bills all across the country. We already know they've done similar things with IHRA and BDS legislation in the United States, but now the terrain is education. And the terrain is an important terrain because we know how transformative it can be. But it's going to take a lot of work to ensure that whatever bills come down the pipe are not weaponized against teachers and community members. And so we have to watch for that. Now, if that does happen, of course, and it happens all the time here in this country, that's when we have to organize. And that's when we have to really build strong movements to defend all people who are targeted as a result of these really racist and discriminatory bills themselves.
Everything that you're saying really resonates a lot with it goes to show really that the issue of Palestine, like a lot of these issues, the issue of anti-racism, an issue of just human liberation, is a global issue, you know, it just reinforces, to my mind, the need for an internationalist politics. But I mean, especially when you're talking about the attacks on Rabab Abdulhadi, it really brings to mind what's happening in the UK at the moment with David Miller. I'm sure most of our viewers and listeners will know David Miller is a sociologist at Bristol University in the UK, who really for the last month or so has been under really sustained attack by pro-Israel groups and Zionist students on campus working together to try and get him fired. What it comes down to is his opposition to Zionism and the fact that really one of the key factors in their really extreme antipathy for him is the fact that he teaches about Islamophobia and the fact that Islamophobia, a large part of the backing for Islamophobia comes from pro-Israel groups, comes from the state of Israel itself. So I think that these kinds of increasing sort of witch hunts are really, they are really a threat. And it goes to show what you're saying, really, the importance of working together and building strong movements to defend each other from these kind of things. But do you see any similarities there as well?
Is that a question for anyone?
Yeah.
Okay. definitely. I think just a couple of things. One, in terms of the internationalism, I don't remember a time when the struggle against Zionism or colonialism was anything but internationalist. And in fact, as Laura mentioned, ethnic studies was originally called third world studies, and it wasn't based on identity politics at all. It wasn't based on trying to raise people's self-esteem. It was part of a third world liberation movement, which included, emerged, the timing's important. After the 67 war and the occupation, that's actually a backdrop, as well as the Organization of Arab Students having their meetings, bringing Stokely Carmichael and Kwame Ture to speak, the connections between liberation movements in Africa, the struggles in the UK in particular, in terms of UK's struggles against racism there and in anti-colonial struggles abroad. So I think this is the continuation of that, but it also signals something else, something I've said many, many times, and it actually comes out in Electronic Intifada all the time. That is, it's not our weakness, it's our strength that they're responding to. I mean, they wouldn't put all this money and time and energy into criminalizing any criticisms of Israel, into underwriting Islamophobia as if it's a legitimate academic and political position. They wouldn't do that unless they felt threatened. And so when we think about the Israeli lobby, these are reactions to movements. When you think about the resources that go into spying on professors and collecting data and trying to expose people and creating these websites that lists activists, even the most recent attacks on Students for Justice of Palestine here at UCLA, where there's a physical war against students who try to organize. I mean, they wouldn't spend that much time unless these movements were strong. And so we have to continue to organize, but also recognize that when the BDS movement, put out its original call, when civil society organizations said, it's time to build a global boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, that was always international, and so it lives on internationalism. And that's the only way it could survive, I think. But this is what we're facing right now, UK, everywhere in the world, I think. But it remains to be seen, how we stand up for each other in all this, and recognize that this, no matter what people think, no matter what they know about Israel's history, or the history of Palestinians or the Nakba, if we do believe in global justice and the rule of law according to kind of international statute, and if we do think that imperialism is a bad thing, and colonialism and apartheid is a bad thing, then we're all going to stand up, irrespective of what kind of criticisms we get, to end this kind of violence and the perpetuation of a colonial structure that's been with us for half a millennium.
I could just add that I think also a strength to kind of piggyback on what Robin was saying here is there's been so much movement built as a result of the attacks on Palestine. And one of the strategies of our opposition is always the divide and conquer, and also to play into identity politics. And we saw that happen with this ethnic studies campaign, where early on, they tried to convince the African-American studies, the Native American studies, Asian-American studies, Latinx and Chicanx studies that we don't need Arab studies. That's going to take away from us, right? Adding Palestine takes something away from us. And that was a very tried and true effort in terms of attempting to make it impossible for us to unite against these right-wing attacks on ethnic studies. And they weren't successful. It's because internationalism is the remedy to that, right? If we understand ourselves as part of a movement against exploitation and racism globally, and if we also understand the root of ethnic studies as connected to those struggles globally and our own experience of settler colonialism here and apartheid everywhere, right? Then we know that ethnic studies is internationalist, and we have to respond in an internationalist way. And that is actually what happened. And so in the last couple of years since this battle broke out in California, what we've seen is actually internationalism getting even deeper, more deeply rooted in scholarship and across K through 12 teachers who are now also trying to question and understand, well, how am I teaching ethnic studies? Am I rooting it in the internationalist anti-colonial framework that also includes Palestine, right? So we've built an internationalist movement here in California and across the country against attempts to divide and conquer and play into identity politics. And like Robin said, which was never meant to be what ethnic studies was, it was always meant to be third world studies. And here we are today actually living that out, right? And we're practicing that on the ground across the world. And, you know, it's not just, I totally think this is very connected to what's happening in other parts of Europe and other parts of even the Arab world. So the criminalization of Palestine is not only specific to the West. And so I think that we are really learning a lot and building a lot of potential for what could come in the coming days around response and defense against more attacks and more advances, right? For all of our struggles, if we're able to include and understand Palestine as part of that.
Right. And money matters in terms of divide and conquer. And just two real quick examples. When I opened up with the comment about what organizations and institutions are not on the list of criticizing or rejecting this curriculum. I mean, I'm at UCLA. Asian American Studies took a very strong stand against it. African American Studies did not. The department I used to be in that I left. Why is that? Well, African American Studies, which is tied to the Bunch Center, gets a lot of money from the state of California, a lot, big grants to do its work. So that buys silence. We see how the attacks on Cornel West, that the refusal of Harvard to bring him up for tenure had everything to do with his criticism of Israel, which had to do with his stand with Palestine. And what is it? Is it simply because the president of Harvard just, you know, is a defendant, a big Zionist? No, he could be, but it's money. It's the threat of donors pulling back their money. And that is one of the ways they get us. When Amazon is going to start giving money to Black organizations to do X, Y, and Z, you know they're going to buy silence. So we have to be, and so this is a really important, I think, lesson for all of us. We cannot depend on a kind of philanthropic or other forms of support to do our work, because you end up being bought. And one of the things that's so bold and courageous is that when you stand up for justice in this sense, when you build those kind of international networks, when you build the kind of momentum that Laura's talking about, you end up paying a price, but it's a price where you can go to sleep at night and not have to worry about who owns you.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point that you've made there about the money. I mean, as a journalist, you're always supposed to follow the money. This is a point that some people on the left really miss when it comes specifically to Israel. Like some people say, I don't know, I would call them more sort of liberal leftist people, but there are some people who kind of jump down your throat when you even mention Israel lobby, as if it's you know, a problematic term in itself, because the idea is that they put forward this idea, well, it's all about the, you know, British imperialism, and it's all about, you know, Israel's services to American imperialism and this kind of thing. Yes, of course, you know, that plays a massive part of it. You know, Israel markets itself, as we know, Israel markets itself as important to, you know, and does provide important services to US imperialism. But it's not only about ideology, right? It's about money. You know, people, politicians too get simply bought off, you know. And we see that in the UK as well, you know, again, to bring it back to the Labour Party again, you know, the leader of the Labour Party now, Keir Starmer, after Jeremy Corbyn, the right-wing leader of the Labour Party, was given £50,000 in donations for his leadership election campaign by Trevor Chin, you know, a prominent Israel lobbyist, prominent Israel lobby funder. So, you know, yes, Keir Starmer did say, I'm a Zionist without qualification, but, you know, what came first, the ideology or the money? I'm not so sure. But I think it's a really important point. You know, both of these things matter and they're often interrelated. And I think that is a lesson that we all really have to learn.
Yeah, it does buy silence, especially from educational institutions. I mean, Angela Davis, just a few days ago, Butler University canceled a lecture that she was supposed to give. You know, so yeah, I mean, this is how they operate. It's intimidation, it's harassment, it's targeted, you know, character assassination, it's slander, it's libel. How are educators now fighting back? You mentioned the coalition that's, like, you know, drafting this alternative, much, you know, more to the fundamental core of ethnic studies. But yeah, what can educators do, not just in California, but around the country and internationally?
So there is the Liberated Ethnic Studies Coalition, right, that is now working on curriculum and toolkits to share with teachers and community members across the country. So that'll be made public very soon, and you can get that information on the Save Arab American Studies Coalition website. But there's also still a fight around what is this curriculum, because AB 2016 came out of grassroots movements in California demanding ethnic studies in California. And there's an argument to be made now, and we have, you know, the Center of Constitutional Rights and other legal organizations have stated, does this meet the mandate? The mandate asked for an ethnic studies curriculum developed by experts. This is not an ethnic studies curriculum, and there's no experts attached to it. There's no authors. They all removed their name. So is this even a curriculum that should be offered? Is this a curriculum that is legal to be shared across the state of California? So there's a lot of different layers right now in terms of how we are struggling against and fighting back against these attack on ethnic studies, but ultimately it's gonna end up a local fight. What's gonna matter is what's happening in your district, in your classroom, and we're really encouraging people to get involved in local ethnic studies campaigns, which are really, you know, there's been ethnic studies for several decades now in this country, but more recently there's been a lot of work to bring it to K-12 schools. And so we are encouraging teachers and practitioners and community members to reach out to us to learn about how to stay involved, because the coming days, it's really going to matter. This terrain of education may determine what anti-racism work and liberatory education will look like in this country as a result. And, you know, we believe, and many young people always say, ethnic studies saved my life, right? And so we truly believe that there's a transformative potential if we're able to embed ethnic studies in high schools across the United States. And that's why it's being attacked. And so we are also not seeing this as only a question for teachers, right? Because it's ethnic studies was always about community and movements. And so we are encouraging people to connect with local campaigns and coalitions and to understand themselves, everyone, as part of this fight. And what's at stake is really the future of education in the United States.
Robin, what about you at UCLA? What do you tell your students who are seeing how the ethnic studies curriculum has been gutted and transformed into some, like, liberal, you know, multicultural diversity studies?
Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of my students are not even aware of this. And I think this is important because it is true that for so many students, I include myself, ethnic studies like saved my life as a freshman at Long Beach State back in 1980. You know, it was transformative for me. And a lot of students, I deal with some really bright, amazing students who as freshmen come in with the same mythologies, the same kind of multiracial kind of approach without any understanding of power. And one of the things, you know, I wrote this essay called Over the Rainbow, which is on second wave ethnic studies. And one of the points that I make is that, you know, that this is cyclical. We're always, you know, there's always protests to either save, restore, reinstitute ethnic studies. And each time it returns back to its core project, and that is the interrogation of power, the production of difference, not for difference sake, but to understand difference as a mode of exploitation and oppression and extraction and accumulation. These are the things that students learn. So they take my class and they're just amazed because they hadn't thought about that. You know, I'm teaching a course in US history right now. And so, and again, this goes back to the question of what is ethnic studies? If we do ethnic studies properly, it's not locked in a class. It's not locked up in a semester or in a particular, you know, curriculum. It transforms everything we learn from the sciences, social sciences, humanities. And so, you know, my first lecture for my US history course, 20th century, is Capitalism Won the Civil War. That's the first lecture. And then it makes them have to think about the triumph of white supremacy, Indian dispossession, you know, and the rise of American empire, not beginning in the 1890s, but that the US was an empire from the get-go. So in many ways, we have a lot of work to do in the classroom, but I completely agree that, you know, we have to support these efforts so that students who come to college can actually have a foundation. We don't have to start from scratch, you know, to understand these things, because it is basic. We're not talking about adding more people. We're not talking about making sure we know about the Sikhs or, you know, Laotians or whatever. What we need to know is how this world came to be, you know, and that's fundamentally what this is about.
Laura, if you could give out the websites and more information on how people can plug into the Save Arab American Studies Coalition and this alternative, if you're an educator in California or beyond and want to learn more about this alternative curriculum, where can people go?
You can go to SaveArabAmericanStudies.org. And then if you want to get more involved or learn about the liberated ethnic studies, you're welcome to reach out to AROC and email us at info@ArabOrganizing.org. And we look forward to building stronger movements and protecting all our students in the coming days.
Laura Kiswani and Robin D.G. Kelly, thank you so much. This has been such a wonderful conversation. And I know that we're so grateful to have you as comrades and colleagues. Thank you so much for being with us on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's it for the Electronic Intifada podcast. Thanks to Sharif Zakout, our music maker and production assistant. For news, information, cultural features and reviews, and pointed opinion and analysis, visit us online at electronicintifada.net, where you can also post comments and sign up for our daily email digest. Follow us on Twitter at Intifada. Radio stations are free to use this podcast, and if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, support the Electronic Intifada by rating it and leaving a review. On behalf of all of us at the Electronic Intifada, thank you for listening.